The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Exclusive interviews with top newsmakers who share their inspiring stories of perseverance, positivity, and more. Now, here's Martha McCallum.
2016 presidential candidate Carly Fiorina started off as a secretary in a small real estate company, moved her way up the ladder, becoming the first woman CEO of a Fortune 50 company. In her new book, Find Your Way, Carly gives us advice on how we all can succeed in our own careers. During our one-on-one interview, Carly talked about her life on the campaign trail and how she found the strength to reveal her biggest insecurities to the American people. Here's Carly Fiorina's untold story.
Maybe because I've lived a lot of life, as you said, and experienced both accomplishment and great tragedy and difficulty, I think I understand how many people feel helpless and powerless and hopeless and like they can't make anything better. And yet I know through all that experience that each of us have far, far more power than we realize, greater potential than we realize, and all of us can actually make a big difference in the problems that impact us. And so this book sort of takes everything I've learned in life to try and help people understand their own potential, their own power, their own problem-solving and leadership capacity, because we all have it.
And even when you were running for president, you were very focused on the citizens taking the power back, on the power of the individual that you wanted to bring to bear in the country. So, you know, how has that idea propelled you into where you are now? Because I know you felt very and feel very strongly about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Now I've seen politics really up close and at the highest levels of the game. And I use the term the game very explicitly. George Washington said to us in 1789, the trouble with political parties is they will come to care only about winning. And I think so many citizens feel as though, wow, we have this back and forth all the time, and yet the problems don't really seem to get much better. I mean, we're still arguing about immigration and healthcare and deficits. And so then they feel helpless and powerless. And I think the genius of this country was an understanding that the citizen is sovereign and that people closest to the problem know best how to solve it. That was the idea I ran my campaign on, but that's the idea behind this book as well, that each of us have. I know this from my own life and from the people I've met along the way. Each of us have enormous potential, more than we realize, and we can work with others and have an impact on the problems that impact us.
And I want to ask you, you know, sort of how to get at that, but something that you said just made me think about this, what's going on right now in the early stages of this next presidential election. And some of what you said reminded me of another CEO, Howard Schultz, who we spoke with the other night, who believes that it's possible to elect a president outside of this two-party system. And the argument that he makes is similar to the one that you just made about how nothing is getting done. Do you think in this environment, as you look ahead to 2020, that it's possible for an independent candidate to break out?
Well, I certainly understand why people want an independent candidate. But the reason our founders didn't want political parties, actually, is because they feared they would become concentrations of power. And they have. And so the problem, of course, is that the two political parties have sort of taken hold of the system. Yeah. What does it take to get on a ballot? Wow, loads of time and loads of money. How are conventions run? Who gets on TV? All those things actually are controlled by political parties on both sides. And I do think that there's nothing wrong with politics. There are good people in politics. But so many of us are waiting for someone else to do something. So many of us are confused about what leadership is. We think, oh, it's the person with the title or the position or who's famous or who's on TV. And the truth is, leadership has nothing to do with those things. Leadership is about changing the order of things for the better, solving problems, collaborating with others. And I know from experience, everyone can lead, but not all of us choose to. And so this book is about helping people find their way towards not feeling helpless and powerless anymore, but making things better.
There's a moment in the book when one of your advisors on the presidential campaign is standing outside of your house, and he is saying to himself, I need to go in there and I need to tell her that the campaign is over, that it's time to throw in the towel on this dream. And when you answered the door, you basically said it for him, you know, good morning, you're there with your dogs, you've got a big smile on your face and you're ready for the day. And you said something that I thought was really interesting about that moment. You said to step away from the presidential race was simply the next right decision to make. It wasn't a failure. It wasn't cause for devastation, grief, or regret. To think that way would be handing my power over to emotions that would never pay me back. That's a very interesting thought, handing yourself over to emotions that will never pay you back. What do you mean by that?
I talk a lot in this book about getting on the path and not getting fixated on a plan. And so many people get fixated on a plan. I need to have a certain destination. I need to be president. I need to be a CEO. I need to be this level by this time. I need to go to this certain college. I need to make this much money. None of those things are fulfilling in and of themselves. If you achieve those things, wonderful. But what I've learned in my life is we have so much more power. We make so much more of a contribution when we are on a path towards fulfilling our potential and helping others fulfill theirs. So I was prepared to win the presidency and do the job. I was also always prepared to lose and do something else. And it was clear that I couldn't win. So it was time to get out.
So talk to me about, you know, when you say that, you know, having goals, I can't believe that you didn't have lots of goals in your life. You became a CEO. I know you were going to go to law school or you started and decided that wasn't your path. But, you know, I think anybody would look at how enormously successful you've been and say, she must have had goals first to be a CEO, to make a lot of money, to do all those things.
Yeah, I didn't. Goals are one thing.
Yeah.
A destination is something else. So this is the truth. I did not have a plan to become a CEO. What I hope I've done is always be on a path to make a positive contribution, to solve the problems in front of me, to help others fulfill their potential, and to challenge myself enough that I unlocked my own potential. And what I've learned is that when you focus on those things, other good things will come along. So no, my last plan was I'm going to law school, and that blew up in my face. What I've learned is life throws unexpected things at you.
It does.
Many people have you seen who throw everything into some destination? I want to be the governor. I want to be the senator. I want to be the president. I want to be the CEO. And then a couple things can happen. Maybe they get there, but it's not what they thought it would be. Mm. Or they get there, and what they've had to do to get there destroys them in the end. We've seen that a lot lately. Or they never get there at all, and then they're devastated. The destination isn't the point. The plan usually disappoints. My goal has always been to solve the problems in front of me, to make a positive contribution. I was teaching a group of students the other day, and they said, how would you define success? And I said, success is a life filled with love and positive contribution and moments of grace. And I do think that's a successful life.
So that's as far as I got in the book. So I know that you need to find your path and you need to sort of ditch the plan, as you say. Then what do you do?
Well, there's some really practical tools in here. So first of all, one of the things that I've learned is that while leadership is not about position or title, it's not about fame or wealth, it is about four pretty fundamental disciplines. Having courage, even when you're afraid. Having character. And not, for example, doing the wrong thing because you think the ends justify the means. That's sometimes very hard, but it is critical to problem solving. Collaborating with others. The dynamic of problem solving is always win-win. Unlike the dynamic of politics, which is win-lose, or the dynamic of sports, which is win-lose, the dynamic of problem-solving is win-win, which means we have to collaborate effectively with others.
My mind just keeps going to that college story that we've all been talking about lately. And, paying to have your kids' SAT answers changed so that they can reach the goal, so that they can end up at Stanford or they can end up at Georgetown or whatever the goal is much more important than the means to get there, which didn't matter in those cases.
Yes, you see, it's a perfect example of people becoming so fixated on the plan. My kid is going to go to this school, that they decide that plan justifies anything. But think about the impact of that over the long term. What have their children learned?
Oh, my goodness.
What message are we sending? And part of the reason also that I wrote this book is because all the messages we're sending in our culture now are, I think, not this. We don't lift up character. We lift up controversy, conflict, outrage, who won, by whatever means necessary. In the end, that doesn't make much of a positive contribution. So there's some very practical tools here. How do you develop the disciplines of problem solving and leadership? And then there's some very basic tools that, honestly, I have used all of my career to solve problems. How do you set the goal? How do you decide who's going to do what? How do you measure your progress? How do you make sure that people are behaving in the right way? So I hope this is a very practical how-to book. But what I'm focused on is there are too many people who feel helpless and powerless. None of us are. All of us can make a difference. And all of us can and should.
So how do you talk about being locked up.
Yeah.
You know, so the people that you're referring to, and I think we all feel this way,
yes.
It's not exclusion.
No.
Everybody feels locked up at times in
That's
your
right.
life, in your career. Give us some advice on how to unlock.
So one of the first things that I say to people is it turns out that people usually, when they're locked up, are afraid of something. There are existential fears. I'm going to die of cancer. There are profound fears. I'm going to lose my daughter. The truth is, most of us are locked up by pretty superficial fears, actually. I'm afraid I'm going to look foolish. I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake. I'm afraid people are going to make fun and criticize me. And my gosh, in technology today, people make fun and criticize people all the time. And so the first step is to get people to actually write down, and I still do this, and I've done it all my life, write down, what are you afraid of? My very first meeting at AT&T as a young entry-level manager was in a strip club. I was terrified. I went to a strip club because that's where the men went to talk business.
Wow.
I was terrified, and I had to write it down. What am I afraid of? I'm afraid of looking stupid. I'm afraid of being in a situation I've never been in before. But the reason
it's
incredible. But we're all afraid of something.
Yep.
Everyone's afraid. And so it's amazing how unlocked you can feel when you actually name it,
mm-hmm.
write it down. And then you can take the next step to say, what's the worst thing that can happen here?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best thing that can happen? And so often the worst thing doesn't happen, but lots of good things can happen.
Right. And if you can convince yourself that you're actually okay with the worst thing that can happen,
yes.
then
you can
everything
move on.
Else, you know, sort of falls short
you
of that.
You can move on.
Exactly. What about you and what you look into the future of? Would you ever consider running again? I look at, you know, Mitt Romney, who ran for president. He's now a senator from Utah. What do you have in mind?
Well, as you know, I don't live life on plan. So the honest answer is, I don't know. I don't have a plan. I didn't have a plan to run for the presidency last time, but I saw an opportunity and I thought I could make a positive contribution. What I'm focused on now is the work at my foundation, Unlocking Potential, where we lift up problem solving and leadership capacity in nonprofit organizations all over the country. These are people who deal with really difficult problems, whether it's Wounded Warrior Project or whether it's Easter Seals or whether it's the work we do with health outcomes in very difficult communities in this country, or whether it's work with the homeless community. The point is that work is very fulfilling to me. I have a business that's going well. And so I will continue to look for opportunities to make a positive contribution and to unlock potential in others. Because I will tell you, Martha, we all need to know what gets us up in the morning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a look that people get when they realize they can do more than they thought they could do. There's a look that people get when they make something better, it's the same look the world over. That look to me is fuel. When I see that look in people's eyes, that fuels me.
You live to put that into people,
yes.
to help yes. them see that they can unlock, that they can enjoy their potential and they can move forward.
And you they see, can make a difference for themselves and others.
One of the things is fear that helps you, you know, recognizing what your fear is. But then what's give me the next step after that. Once you've determined what your fear, what you're afraid of, how do you propel yourself sort of forward?
So after you've gone through the steps of, okay, what am I really afraid of? Then you have to go through the exercise of, what's the worst that can happen? All right, let me process that. Can I deal with that? What's the worst thing that happens if I run for president? I could lose. Okay.
Right.
What's the best thing? I'll tell you a personal story. I was very reluctant to talk about our daughter.
Yeah.
She suffered from the disease of addiction. I was very reluctant to talk about her. And yet, I believe that leadership requires authenticity, which means you must be transparent. And this was an incredibly important part of my family's life. And so I had to write down, what am I afraid of? And what it turned out I was afraid of, I'm afraid that people will think, what's wrong with Carly? Couldn't you stop this? You're a bad mother. You're a bad person. And once I said that out loud, and I thought, all right, what's the worst that can happen? People think that. What's the best that can happen? Maybe I can help someone else. And the first time that I actually talked about Lori, of course, it was very difficult. But this woman came up to me afterwards, and she said, thank you so much for sharing your story, because I'm dealing with this. That was a blessing for me.
Because seeing someone like you who couldn't fix that.
Yes, I couldn't fix it.
Is very empowering.
Yes.
And people have empathy for you when
yes.
they understand
yes.
that they have also gone through that.
And so we have some very practical tips in this book as well about, what does collaboration take? Well, it takes humility. You can't think you know it all. Mm-hmm. You can't think you do it all. You have to realize, it's not false modesty, but you have to realize, I need other people to achieve something worthwhile and lasting. We all do. So we have some ways to practice learning humility. And how do you become more empathetic? We are lacking empathy greatly in our society today. I mean, if we disagree with someone, we think they're stupid and evil, and we have no empathy.
So true.
And yet, that doesn't help anything or anyone.
Last question for you is a political one. When you look at women running for office, mm-hmm. there's a lot more of them
yes.
out there today. What do you think about that? And how important is it or not that women hold high political office in this country?
Well, women are more than half the nation. So women should be more than half of everything, really. Because if they're not, we're wasting talent. So I think it's wonderful more women are running. I also think it's a shame that women have allowed themselves to be politicized and used in a way. When I was running for president, my candidacy was called offensive to women by a lot of women's groups who didn't agree with me. Well, my goodness, men don't agree. Why should women agree? We need to be able to resist assassinating someone's character because we disagree with them. And we also need to be able to resist excusing someone's character because we do agree with them. And so I hope we'll take a more holistic view of women and say, yay, whatever their beliefs are, we need more of them in the workplace, in political life. We need more of them fulfilling their potential and changing the order of things for the better.
Carly's new book, Find Your Way, is available now. You've been listening to The Untold Story. I'm Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcasts.com.